The Gary Knoll Show, weekdays at noon Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Video streaming live, as well as broadcasting live from our Upper West Side studios. Today, in our guest segment, in the second part of our program, the global land grab theft among the world's power brokers in finance and multinational corporations, a lot of names you think are good, a lot of NGOs, a lot of UN-related groups, but they're not. They're greedy. They're after the land in Africa, and they have the power and persuasion because of former top people in administrations to make deals, hedge funds, equity partnerships, pension funds. They're all running for the land in Africa, and they're getting it. The most comprehensive insight you've heard on this topic, but the trouble is, what happens when they get the land? What about all the people who live on the land? Well, we don't hear about them, do we? Fox News, none of them are doing a program on what happens to the victims of this unmitigated greed. We'll talk about that, including something from the BBC under Africa. Ethiopia forces thousands off land. Human Rights Watch talks about it. So we're going to talk about it. We believe that when major corporations and U.S. government agencies support taking away indigenous people's land, causing them to suffer or starve to death, that is not right. And so we're going to address it. Separately today, if time permits, an issue of the day, and that is standardized tests. I'm a big believer we have to pay more attention to not just how teaching is done, but what is being taught. I do not believe that we have investigated at all the companies behind the testing, the tutorials, and the curriculums. As a teacher, as someone who has taught for a long time, I would never accept the type of curriculums that are being given. So how is it they're not challenged? How is it these terrible curriculums end up in schools? How is it that good teachers are now forced to teach bad curriculums? And then we wonder why so many students are ill-prepared when they enter the real world. We'll talk about that, and that'll be a commentary feedback. From the environment today, more proof the system is broken. Bee colony collapse continues. What can be done to slow down climate change? And Oklahoma typically has about 50 earthquakes, small ones a year, until they began hydrofracking in 2009. Then that kind of went up from 50 a year to 1,047 just in 1 year, prompting researchers to install seismographs in the area. Hydrofracking, yes, it's behind the earthquakes. So should we pay some attention to what could happen in New York State? Yes, we should. Also, why are all the fish dying? We'll tell you about that, too. And one comment, thank you for sending me in emails concerning a comment that I had not yet verified. Yesterday I mentioned that the government, the armed forces, is training its military by taking goats into the field, cutting off their legs, and then asking the soldiers to try to mend the goats. as if this was a real-life situation in the battlefield, so that you could know what to do if the leg got blown up or blown off of one of your comrades. I had not heard this before. It is true. In fact, yeah, I read this in the bill summary, the H.R. 1417. There's actually the Battlefield Excellence Through Superior Training Practices Act. Representative Filner Robb from California introduced this. And so what it means is this. They are using this. Let me quote from the actual legislation. Quote, Battlefield Excellence Through Superior Training Practices Act, or BEST Practices Act, requires the Secretary of Defense no later than October 1st, 2014, to develop, test, and validate human-based training methods for training members of the armed forces in the treatment of combat injuries with the goal of replacing live animal-based training methods. I think that everyone should be very concerned that they are sacrificing in enormous numbers live animals, putting them through torturous processes of cutting off their legs. When we realize how easy it is to develop simulators and then teach large number of people in basic training, or if they're out of basic training in every single combat camp in the world, you can put a simulator and you can show in an operational theater setting, here's what you do when there is any injury of any type to a comrade. Here's the procedures that are best able to help that person. And then you show it. And you show it over and over again. And you can show it in real life situations, because there are so many field hospitals, traumatic wards, that film this. So you can show with actual people being treated, disguise the person's face, of course, but at least you see. And then you can do it just like we do with animation. No one is hurt. No animal is sacrificed. In fact, it's better training, because then a person has a chance to see that there's a difference between a goat's leg and a human leg. A human's going to act differently than a goat. So why not do it intelligently? Oh, I forgot. It's the armed forces. They never do anything intelligently or humanely. But at least now we can be rightfully angered that they have sacrificed untold numbers of animals just to show people what to do in case someone is injured in the field. In any case, that. And I'll also be dealing today with the fact that new information that came from the actual transcripts of Federal Reserve meeting that showed, the Federal Reserve, quote, knew about the housing bubble in 2004, both from specific research and comments made at meetings of Federal Reserve governors, and chose to do nothing about it. But hold on a second. President Bush and President Obama and the administrations right and left have chosen all not to bring any charges against Alan Greenspan, the chairman of the Federal Reserve when the housing crisis started, or Ben Bernanke later, because we didn't know there was a housing bubble. Okay, well, if you didn't know, then you really can't be held accountable. Wrong. You did know. You lied. Now, since you made those statements under oath, that's perjury. So let's see how many people jump on this story that we're breaking exclusively here. The Federal Reserve lied to the public. They knew in advance. They knew there was a bubble, and they did nothing about it. And I'll give you the specific names, the date of what was said, who said it, and examples of how bad they saw the housing bubble to be, and they chose to continue to not bring this to the public's attention, not to challenge the low interest rates, the people who were doing this, or the banks. In other words, everybody went along with this. You can't have it both ways. You can't say we can't be prosecuted because we didn't know, and then we find out you did know, and you're not held accountable. So, needless to say, we have a lot to talk about today, so let's get started. First up on health and nutrition, we always try to bring you the latest from scientifically based, good quality, independent research. This is from Arthritis Research and Therapy, peer reviewed journal. A major Dutch study found that arthritis is linked to ultra short telomeres. I'll quote this. This is a current article, and it says that Danish researchers report their discovery of a higher incidence of osteoarthritis among individuals who have ultra-short telomeres. By the way, telomeres, which are protective caps that reside at the end of chromosomes, shorten with age, and telomere length has been associated with cellular aging and longevity. Abnormally short telomeres can be the result of sudden cell damage and have been observed in some types of cancer. And this was done at University of Southern Denmark, and this is where they found this. Now, what does this mean in lay language? If you're not familiar with telomeres, but you are familiar with osteoarthritis. I have found that in doing all of my anti-aging research, when I'm able to stop the telomere from shortening and actually grow new telomeres or lengthen telomeres, that you literally can reverse the aging process. You can change the DNA. I was able to take rats at 1 year, and that would be about 80 years old in human life. And by giving them specific food and nutrients, I was able to give them simple tests on a treadmill, and they began to perform at the same age as what would be a teenager rat, like a two-month-old rat. And how did I do this? I gave them fresh vegetable juices, organic vegetable juices, high in wheatgrass juice. I would make fresh wheatgrass juice every morning and give them a lot of it. They had no tap water. They had purified water when they had water, but it was mainly different types of vegetable juices. They would have fresh fruits and berries galore, whole grains and sprouts. They loved the sprouts. There was never obesity, yet there was no caloric restriction. They had an open environment, so there was no confinement and stress. Their food was hidden all the time, so therefore the challenge of putting them through some processes always allows us to grow. Any challenge you have is an opportunity for growth. And then soft music. And I would put on Brahms, I would put on very, very soothing music. And Gregorian chants and meditation, Stephen Halpern, wonderful flute music. They lived 33% longer than normal rats. Now, I did this 6 out of 6 times over a 6-year period, so it was confirmed repeatedly. Now, how do we translate that to humans? Okay, simple. First, what causes a telomere to shorten? How about stress? Cortisol. Cortisol, for whatever the underlying cause, anxiety, insecurity, loss, mourning, rage, helplessness, all of that creates cortisol, which can then shorten the telomere. So stress. Hence, de-stress. Refined carbohydrates, loaded with calories, and excessive calories. What is the single undisputed scientific evidence about how to lengthen lifespan? Reduce caloric intake. Hence those tribes or groups of people in the world that do not stuff themselves in a gluttonous way as we do have longer lifespans and are healthier and do not suffer the same disease rate, providing they have adequate food. Thirdly, inflammatory foods, deep fried foods, highly cooked foods are pro-inflammatory. Animal proteins are not only highly inflammatory, but they cause cancer. And especially the meat foods, bacon, bologna, salami, very toxic. Carbonated beverages and coffee, artificial sweeteners, and dairy. Those are all foods that can cause inflammation, and the inflammation then causes a speeding up of the telomere life cycle, so it shortens it. So what will extend it? living foods, juices, nuts, walnuts, almonds, pistachio, pecans, macadamias, healthy oils, the oils such as primrose, borage seed oil, black currant seed oil is great for your cells. And then certain nutrients really do impact your telomeres. The three top nutrients to allow you to live a longer lifespan at the cellular level would be L-carnosine, carn, C-A-R-N-O-S-I-N-E, carnosine, 1,000 to 3,000 milligrams a day in divided doses. Resveratrol, from 100 to 300 milligrams. Now, you can get it in a standardized tablet, that's good. You can get it in powders, that's good. You can get it by drinking red wine, that's good but not great. And you can get it in eating grapes, that's better than drinking wine. And you can get it in drinking grape juice, and that's better than drinking wine or eating grapes, because you're getting concentrates. Or you can get the grape concentrate, that's even better than those. Or you can get a powder of it, and that's the best of all. But get it into your system. And alpha-lipoic acid. Alpha, A-L-P-H-A, lipoic, L-I-P-O-I-C, acid, the R fraction. So when you start taking these nutrients, you're really helping your cells. So now we know that we can do something about the shortening, and not only are we going to help ourselves with arthritis, we're going to help ourselves live a longer and healthier life. And one other point on this, from Science Daily, from the International Journal of Food Safety, Nutrition and Public Health. Quote, increased dietary fiber decreases diseases. Plural. Quote, we should all be eating more dietary fiber to improve our health. That's the message from a health review of scientists. The team has looked at research conducted into dietary fiber during the last few decades across the globe. The higher the fiber content, the less the diseases. Why? Because you're getting roughage. So what's in a high protein diet? No fiber. What's in the standard American diet? Very little fiber. Lots of fat and lots of protein. What's in a good vegan healthy diet? Lots of fiber, lots of enzymes, lots of chlorophyll, phytonutrients, antioxidants, all of which are positive for you. So that's the diet that's going to allow you to live a longer life and a healthier life. And one other scientific fact here, from the several universities and hospitals in Australia, and published this study, quote, fish oil decreases osteoarthritis pain. Hard evidence has now been found that taking small amounts of fish oil daily reduces joint pain in osteoarthritis patients. A 2-year study found that it reduces the pain and inflammation caused by osteoarthritis. Question, when was the first time I said take 2 tablespoons of emulsified cod liver on an empty stomach and you can help yourself overcome arthritis? 2 tablespoons on an empty stomach of emulsified cod liver oil in the morning and watch what happens to your arthritis pain. I looked it up in 1977. How about that? All right? So I'm glad that they just discovered this. Yeah, you're right. Boy, I'm glad I'm listening to you. Okay. Reality even catches those who try to deny it sooner or later. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Trying hard to recreate what had yet to be created. Once
I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. We have a lot to share. Let me take care of a few other issues before we go to a special guest on our phone prior to our main guest and a challenge to USA Today. First off, today they have a chart of the United States in USA Today under Doyle Rice's column, and it says Drought Outlook, and it shows, well, it shows Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Mississippi, Louisiana, Alabama, Texas, Oklahoma, Nevada, Arizona, New Mexico, and California all in drought alert. Quote, the disastrous southern drought, which led to $10 billion in crop and agricultural losses in 2011, is forecast to continue. You bet it's going to continue. But we're the ones who told you why it would be continuing in the foreseeable future for decades, and why there are certain places you simply should consider as not the best places to live because they're going to be running out of water and quality soil to grow and excessively high temperatures. And we can expect some of those temperatures to be coming this summer. We will should experience some of the hottest days in history in the United States this summer. So one more reason that we have to pay attention now. Up on my website, I have free, and it took us a year to do this full time, the best places, the greenest places, the most sustainable places by all the important markers to live. And I take into consideration nuclear plants, hydrofracking, water, soil, crime, all these other factors that you should consider. It's there. Read the article. Use it as you will as a map to help you in the future. Okay? Now, let's go to the Federal Reserve for a moment. Because thank goodness at least one of the people is keeping the Federal Reserve in our consciousness, at least until the progressives can get behind a move to show who these people are, who owns the controlling stock in the banks that control the Federal Reserve, how do their meetings, which are on private individuals, not government employees, control the full flow of currency in the world. Forget the Treasury. The Treasury is the tiny hair on the tail of the dog, but the dog is the Federal Reserve. In my opinion, it should be completely dismantled. All power is taken away to print money because right now all they're doing is printing fiat currency. We don't have a damn thing to back up what they're printing. And if we were Tanzania, if we were Brazil, we'd be considered irresponsible. And let the Treasury do the printing. Now, but it also acts as a bank for any corporation that wants to speculate or has failed and wants to be saved. But do you and I get that same advantage? Not at all. Here's the latest. Quote, the Federal Reserve knew about the housing bubble in 2004 from New Deal 20.org, Matt Stoller. And here's what it says. I noticed something odd about the recent release of the 2006 Federal Reserve Open Market Committee transcripts. Applebaum has a characteristically good article about the inept chatter at the meeting that is held twice a year where the various participants seem to have missed the housing bubble completely and suitable mockery of the Federal Reserve. However, what do we find? And let me show you what is found. It is, quote, it is clear from going into earlier transcripts of the FOMC meetings of the Federal Reserve that the Fed actually knew there was a housing bubble as early as 2004. It had all the data, both quantitative and anecdotal, and even discussed the possibility of a bubble internally. And here's what is said. Federal Reserve Bank President from Atlanta, Jack Gwem, warned, quote, a number of folks are expressing growing concern about potential overbuilding and worrisome speculation in the real estate markets, especially in Florida. Entire condo projects and upscale residential lots are being pre-sold before any construction, with buyers freely admitting that they have no intention of occupying the units or building on the land, but rather are counting on flipping the properties, selling them quickly at higher prices, unquote. Mr. Ferguson, Roger Ferguson, Fed Vice Chairman in 2004. The other question I have deals with Chart 3 on housing prices. My question about the footnote, which says that the rent-price ratio is adjusted for biases in the trends of both rents and prices, is that where you pick up demographics and life cycle factors? What are these biases in the trends, and how does one think about changing demographics and the relative attractiveness of owning a house versus renting? And then it goes on to talk about how they had this whole discussion in here. Quote, had we not adjusted for them, the rent-to-price ratio would have been much lower at the end of the point, so it would have looked more alarming. So they knew they had a bubble, but they kept it out of people's discussions. They could have stopped the bubble. They could have stopped this massive amount of pain we're feeling. They chose not to. Who was the head? Alan Greenspan. And next up, more proof the system is broken. Bee colony collapse. From David Atkins of Hullabaloo. Quote, and it goes on to talk about, although news about colony collapse disorder has died down, commercial beekeepers have seen average population losses of about 30% each year since 2006. Paul Towers of the Pesticide Action Network. Towers is one of the organizers of a conference that brought together beekeepers and environmental groups this week to tackle the challenges facing the beekeeping industry and the agricultural economy. So while we don't hear about it anymore and saw the news cycle, you have massive loss of 30% per year. Well, you're out of bees in a few years then. And why is that important? One third of all the food that you eat is able to grow because of pollination from bees. You eliminate the bees, eliminate pollination. You eliminate pollination, well, you just cause a lot of starvation in the United States and elsewhere. And do we know what causes it? You bet we know what causes it. Pesticides. I'll get to that on an upcoming program. And by the way, I mentioned yesterday that the show on Monday night, Death by Medicine, had been shown. It was at the New City, the Theater for the New City, the Theater for the New City downtown. They did a great job, and I want to thank the program director and others for inviting us down there. Now, let's go over to Marie McGovern, standing by. Hi, Marie.
His timing is perfect, don't you think?
Yeah, turn off your radio, Marie. Okay? Just turn off your radios because you're listening in the background of the radio. Yesterday's USA Today, the front page, headlines. There's a couple there, a senior citizen couple, and it says, quote, no cure and no promise of cure. Bob Blackwell was diagnosed with Alzheimer's 2006 at age 64. His wife Carol says the disease is robbing him of his ability to communicate clearly. We must find a cure to save memories. The U.S. launches a war to beat Alzheimer's by 2025. A war to beat Alzheimer's. Should this also be a part of the whole war on poverty? War on drugs. War on crime. War on terror. War on cancer. War on depression. War on heart disease. All of those have ended up as medical Vietnams. None have succeeded. They've all been boondoggles, but enormously profitable to the pharmaceutical companies or the special interest groups get in line to take advantage of their political positioning and to get the money. No one ever asks. We've spent hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars collectively on these. We have nothing to show for it. Yeah. We don't look at the results. We don't judge people based upon the results. We judge it based upon the promises made, and then we forget about it. But they don't. They get those big checks to hold those big conferences, to have those big offices and those big bonuses every year. But no one gets cured. Now let's say again hello to Marie McGovern. Marie, are you there? Marie? No, she's not there. We're trying to get it right on. A little background on Marie. When I first met Marie McGovern, she could not conduct a conversation. She was on her way to be living in an assisted living center for Alzheimer's patients who cannot take care of her themselves. She had a stellar career. She was an educator at New York University. She had a background as a master of historical art. She was a provider of art collections for Lloyd's of London and others. And then it began to all go away when her brain began to become deficient. Maureen, you're back. Nice to have you with us.
Hi.
Now you can tell your story. Now, Maureen McGovern, I want you to tell your story. Let's summarize it for this audience.
Okay.
Tell us what level you were at in your ability to remember, communicate, take care of yourself, conduct your life prior to starting the protocols.
Okay, I'll be brief since we're on the air. I was in a stage of Alzheimer's such that I could not eat, dress, read, or take care of myself in the most fundamental ways. I could have easily died in a nursing home. I did go to two assisted living homes in Illinois. Then Dr. Null, you gave me vitamin exercise protocol, which I faithfully adhere to. I'm now handling my affairs productively. I still cannot work, but I'm actively utilizing useful literate skills right now. Actually, at this minute, I'm trying to recoup my last savings, which were lost by an unscrupulous financial company. I've had to use verbal, writing, team building, and spiritual skills, since I don't have an attorney, I'm still doing all the work pro se. This is a long way from being lost on the street, a grocery store, not even be able to follow the narrative of the TV program. I'm grateful to you, Dr. Null, and to your team. Thank you.
Now, hold on here. Was it true or not that you frequently would go months without bathing?
I don't like to answer that, but yes.
Okay.
I was locked up and I couldn't eat. There's no, I was eating up Chinese food and I didn't know where I was. If I was brought to a medical place, I couldn't even remember if it was uptown or downtown.
Is it true that when you would go to a store, you wouldn't be able to buy food for yourself because you wouldn't know what money to get back or what to give and what to do with that?
I just handed them a credit card.
Okay. Was it true that when you would go to museums that you previously had gone to and gave instruction in paintings, Homer's work and other work, that then when you went, you couldn't even define the painting that you had previously been a master educator on?
Right. I broke down and cried, and I found my way to the impressor's room and just looked at the colors. I gave up.
All right. Was it true that you used to collect works of art for some of the more prestigious groups around the world because you were their point person on understanding the importance or the details of famous artists' work?
Yes.
Okay. Was it true that you were an instructor at New York University?
Yes. I was an adjunct instructor. Yes.
Professor, yes.
Yes.
Was it true that you used to have a background, you could read any literature at any level?
The kind of academic writing I had to write was at the highest level, both for here and Europe.
Is it true or not that you lost all those skills once you evolved into Alzheimer's?
Couldn't turn on a computer, couldn't watch a TV show.
Okay. And today?
I'm self-sufficient. I live alone. I cook. Like I told you about what I'm going through, I think it takes a lot of guts to fight for yourself with something, you know, as big as this. You know, I wish I had a lawyer, but nothing's going to stop me. I'm fighting for my savings. I think so. The level of functionality is I'm not just sitting here in my house, you know, reading little books or whatever. I'm actively fighting for my life back and my functionality, and hopefully someday I'll be going to work.
Is it correct or not that you actually have taken friends and other people to the museums to once again engage in conversations on the great works of art?
I did that. I unfortunately was given 300 milligrams of anesthesia twice this year, and I had surgery, so that has not been possible. I have a big hole in my my leg they pulled things out of, so between the anesthesia poisoning and that, I don't do that right now.
But otherwise, if you were able to do the walking to get there, having nothing to do with the Alzheimer's from a separate injury, an accident, you could carry on those discussions.
Yes, and with the green powder. Actually, this shows your stuff even works.
No, don't even talk about that.
Well, the point is, this, you know, even after another assault on my brain, I've been able to come back.
Great. Now, here's my final question for you. Right now, we are told officially, by official medicine and their official media, there is no treatment that works. There is no cure. You were at NYU, Rush Center. You were at Columbia University. You saw the people.
Well, not so much Columbia, NYU, Rusk.
Okay. You didn't see the people improving there. Now you are in a position to be, at least, I could be wrong on this, and I will hold judgment that there may be someone else somewhere that has made the improvement you have. I've looked. We haven't found that person yet. To my knowledge, you're the only person in the United States that we can say has made this kind of recovery from Alzheimer's. Have you seen anyone else through any of the other protocols, the official medicines that you were instructed and everyone else that was there instructed? Have you seen anyone else made the improvements you've made?
Well, let me answer that as briefly as possible. I was invited to a group of Alzheimer's people who were in earlier stage than I was. They were 10 times smarter than I was. They're now in nursing homes. Okay. However, you have people who call me, and they're doing the protocol. So, you know, we sort of created a little movement here of people who are willing to do the protocol and are reaping the benefits. So, yes.
So you're in touch with these
people. I work with and deal with, and Luann works with, and Dr. Feldman and other people associate with you, making market improvements.
Okay, that's good. So, following the protocol you followed, other people working with you that you're in intimate contact, meaning personal communication with, they're making improvements.
Yes.
Okay. So why don't you make a call to USA Today and ask those editors before you say that we need to just spend hundreds of billions of dollars and give it to the pharmaceutical industry, maybe they ought to look at something like a human being who can talk with them today about the improvements they've done that might give us a whole new way of not only approaching Alzheimer's, but you've met Kenny, haven't you?
Kenny, actually, my physical therapist took me in a wheelchair, and strangely enough, he was 30 miles out of New Jersey, and he was playing with his child. He has a great job, and his wife, and it was the first time I was out, and I saw him at NYU's park. He's doing great. When we first started, he was sort of like me.
Yeah, well, we had to help him up the steps. He had advanced multiple sclerosis.
Right, he had to go through the steps like me.
That's correct. What Kenny said in my office 3 days ago with his wife, 100% healed. The neurologist, all the scans, the MRIs, every test they've done, they can find no evidence of multiple sclerosis in him. Now, if anyone else has reversed multiple sclerosis, please let us know.
I'm different. My brain scans do still show damage, but my functionality is very good.
Because we're rebuilding all the cells step by step. You know, it's like someone with advanced cancer. You first have to stop the cancer. You have to give them a quality of life.
Right.
Then in time, each and every day, you get better.
Right.
So there's you, and there are a lot of other people. So it's not a secret. We're putting the word out there.
Yet, and there's over a 20-year difference between Kenny and me, so you were able to get him early.
Well, Maureen, give me your number for other people who would like to call you and get some help from you.
I think that I'd like them to call Luann,
okay.
Who's a nurse. And then if they want to talk to me, she will email me, and I will be happy to talk to them.
Sure.
I think that's the appropriate.
Do you have Luann's phone
it.
Number? I don't have her phone number.
You can get her at whnn@aol.com, and she is very fast at getting back to people, both with her number and her contacting me.
Okay. Maureen McGovern, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Dr. Null. I'm alive. I'm well. I walked in to your health support group, and I'm alive today, and I'm the one that should be thanking you.
Appreciate it.
God bless.
Back in a moment with our guests. Please stay with us. I can just imagine the kind of ruckus that's going to go on with the pharmaceutical companies. On the one hand, the most powerful award-winning documentary, Death by Medicine, we released this year, and we haven't even started our national campaign on that to get the word out about what's wrong with medicine, that we should be paying attention to, and what should be changed in medicine that long ago should have been stopped, making it the number one cause of death and injury in the world. And the other side of the equation, being able to get results that they can't get, are not getting. So that's a double negative. I wonder what they're going to throw back at us, and they will. When you start seeing articles or whatever it is on the internet or anything they can do, they'll be hitting back. We expect it. Don't be alarmed by it. But that's too much truth for them to handle without some response. It's okay. We'll still be here tomorrow, healing, helping, and enlightening. They'll still be there tomorrow if they're the New York Post or Daily News or the other rags, propagandizing for the Rupert Murdochs and the pharmaceutical companies and the people who have something to lose if the public should ever again be able to go over to the light side and see the truth. We're putting a challenge out. I'm challenging. Here's my challenge today. I'm challenging the National Institute of Health. I'm challenging the Alzheimer's Foundation, the Parkinson's Foundation. I'm challenging the Multiple Sclerosis Foundation. We have reversed or improved substantially all of these, and we have the people to prove it. I presented at a scientific conference to 7,000 scientists. We have every step of the way documented, and we did it naturally and non-toxically. You give me 100 persons with advanced Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and multiple sclerosis. You take 100. You use the best medicine from the best centers in your medical protocol. I'll use mine. Film it all. Let the public see every day what we're doing. And then after 16 months, that's all it took in my case, 16 months, let's see who has helped reverse disease and regained a person their life. If you're afraid of that challenge, throw bricks and bats and slanders. If you're not afraid of that challenge, then take it on and let's see who has truth in healing. I'm Gary Nall. Lou Ann Panessi's phone number, by the way, is 631-504-6198. 631-504-6198. Call her. Evidently, I was told Marie Montgomery got so many calls. She was on the phone 24 hours a day. She has a whole support group all over the world that she's helping using the same protocol I gave her, but she's helping people. That's very important. One quick program announcement. This Saturday, my one and only lecture open to the public will be on, if it's my life, then I'm going to live it. The whole idea that we are living someone else's life, even succeeding at what we do and still feeling that big empty ache, that sense that there has to be something else. When your life is stuffed and you pour more into it, you just come away with the idea that something's missing. Well, this is a very important lecture I'm going to be giving because it's going to deal with the truth of what we're missing in our lives. I've never given this lecture before. In fact, it was kind of, you'd find it kind of funny. There I am on New Year's Eve doing this long drive and pull off the road, and I sit there and I write for 3 hours. Because I'm thinking, what's going on in someone's mind who gets out of college, who has $100,000 in debt and doesn't have a job and has to go live at home? How are they going to relate with their parents, themselves, their self-esteem, their peers? What if you're a 60-year-old and you've worked dedicatedly and now you don't have that job and you don't have your retirement, you can't get Social Security, and yet you can't afford even the basics, and you're looking at, if you don't have a family, of having no support system, what do you do? Or you're looking for a relationship thinking that's what's going to be the road to nirvana. And then you have it and it doesn't work. This exceptional notion of over-the-top exuberance that we place in things, only to see the reality of what we end up with isn't what we had imagined. I'm going to deal with all this stuff. I just kept writing and writing. Heavy lecture coming at you. It'll be filled today. You can call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Now let's say hello to my guest, who is standing by in Oakland, California. And we're trying to get her back on the phone here in a second. We keep losing a line. And until then, let's just see if we can get her back. Sometimes we have it difficult with the line. Her name is Anuradha Mittal, and that is spelled M-I-T-T-A-L. L. She is the founder and executive director of the Oakland Institute, which is a think tank promoting policies in social justice and the environment. She's an internationally renowned expert on trade, development, human rights, and agriculture issues. And she's received many awards and was named the most valuable thinker in 2008 by The Nation magazine. And she's authored numerous books, including The Great Land Grab, Rush for the World's Farmland Threatens Food Security, and For the Poor, Voices from Africa. And so she is with us now. Nice to have you with us today.
Pleasure here.
I'm very concerned, as many people in our audience are, that we don't look behind the scenes. Well, frequently we don't have access to know who's buying the land in Africa. Are they hedge funds? Are they groups of syndicates? And what happens to the people whose land was there? Nobody thinks maybe they're just buying vacant land that had no value. And if that's not the case, if there were people living in those lands, what happens to them? What happens to the water that they're going to use to grow their foods or their fuel crops? What happens to the environment? What happens to the quality of life to those people? Those are the issues I would appreciate that you share with us, all right?
Sure. Well, I think you've just outlined it very, very well. Most of the people by now, thanks to good work done by media, have heard of a trend that has come to be known as land grabs. But also, a lot of us believe that these are countries such as China, which, because of its large population, need African lands to feed its population. But our research at the Oakland Institute actually has shown that there are a diverse set of actors that are in this land rush, you know, basically treating Africa as the Wild West, as they are kind of securing and leasing and buying vast tracts of land. And these include private equity funds, these include hedge funds, who are being lured to Africa because they're getting complete control over water, as you just mentioned. They are able to get these lands for which they pay less than they would pay for coffee in New York. Sometimes they pay 23 cents per hectare for the quality of land that you would pay $26,000 per hectare in UK or $16,000-$17,000 in the United States. So they are taking over these lands without concern for people who live on those lands.
And where are these lands? Please give us an idea of which countries are being affected and which nations or groups are buying the most land.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting because when you look at Africa, which our research has done, you find the entire continent is being targeted for these land grabs, whether it is Tanzania or Zambia or countries such as Democratic Republic of Congo to Mali to Sierra Leone. So almost the whole of Africa is being targeted for these land grabs. The other interesting thing that is happening is, along with these diverse actors, yes, you do have Gulf states, you have Indian corporations, you have the Korean corporations, and you have these private equity hedge funds that really have nothing to do with agriculture other than hoping to make, you know, 25% to 40% returns. They are actually being assisted by the larger financial institutions. So you have, for instance, World Bank Group and its own subsidiaries, such as the International Finance Corporation, that are promoting this trend as the new development paradigm for Africa. You know, till now, we know that the developing world has been told to use its valuable resources to grow cash crops to meet the needs of consumers in the West. But now they're being told, along with not just using the resources, to allow the lease of these lands, which really makes vulnerable communities, the indigenous, the women, people who might not have, you know, title deeds to their land that they have lived on for centuries, or their ancestors have been there, or the pastoralists who need these corridors for their way of life and their movement. All of that is being denied and taken over so we can grow, you know, in some cases flowers, or grow, as you said, fuel crops, or grow cereals for export while people in the country starve.
What happens to the resources that are there? Because you can't grow anything without water, and we know that throughout Africa, the rivers and the tributaries of those rivers are crucial to the life of the people. If you're going to be drawing off an enormous amount of water from the Niger or others, you could adversely affect all the people that would otherwise be downstream from that water because they're going to get less water, or maybe in time no water. Doesn't that set up the potential in the future of really adverse effects as far as water drainage and usage?
Well, that's a very, very important point, Dr. Null, because, you know, when you look at the whole scenario, I mean, on one hand, you have private equity funds such as Chetan Atlas. When we were speaking to them, they boasted that internally the Africa Land Fund is called the Water Fund, and that they were targeting countries such as Zambia because they have an abundance of water, and they were not just securing lands, but they were securing their first water rights. Without concern for what happens to the people communities who are downstream and might not have access to that water. But also, the other big concern is the kind of conflict this kind of water use can cause. Right now in Ethiopia, you have this dams being built in South Omo, on one hand, which is going to impact the indigenous communities that have depended on this overflow of water from the river for their agriculture, for their way of life. So on one hand, all of that will be wiped out. But that kind of large plantations for cotton and sugar that are being planted in South Omo is having an adverse impact on Lake Turkana and its water levels in Kenya. Or if you look at the impact of that on Egypt and availability of water for that country, all of those are going to contribute to further food crisis in the continent. They will give rise to more conflict between nations and between communities.
What can we do about this? How can we become more involved to stop this type of land grab that will increase poverty and food shortages and water shortages and land degradation in Africa?
You know, that's again a very important question, because we can read a report in the Guardian newspaper or the New York Times about these land grabs, say in faraway places like Ethiopia, and we feel kind of, you know, disempowered as to what we can do. You know, we believe when we hear Secretary of State, God, it's the Chinese again oppressing Africans, as we hear about China's efforts to colonize Africa. But what our research at the Oakland Institute has clearly demonstrated is that we can do lots. For instance, our research showed that university endowments from Vanderbilt University to Harvard University are involved in investing in private equity funds that are taking over resources in Africa, are grabbing land in Africa. Or we do know that our pension funds, for instance, are getting involved in funds, private equity and hedge funds, that are investing again in these schemes. So we know it's not the Africans who have their money in pension funds or in university endowments. So we do become responsible to be demanding responsible endowments, to be questioning where our pension funds are investing. So the first key is going to be, A, being very aware of what's going on. Two, we do know that there are investors, again, our research pointed out, such as AgriSol, an investor from Iowa, who is involved in the largest land deal in Tanzania, which would displace over 160,000 people who have lived on that land for over 40 years, are smallholder farmers, and their lives would be devastated. Their livelihoods would be gone. So we have had action alerts around that. We are about to launch a new action alert against USAID for its support of a regime in Ethiopia, which, as a recent report from Human Rights Watch and Oakland Institute shows, it's basically these land grabs, these large agricultural investments are happening by destroying indigenous lifestyles, by displacing people. In fact, the government of Ethiopia is displacing 1.5 million people, and they'll be moved out into these so-called new villages where they have no idea where their livelihoods would come from, where their food would come from. But these lands would be then given away to investors from India and elsewhere. So the people in highlands, the political elites, can benefit. So we can question support of USAID, because Ethiopia is the largest food aid recipient of the United States, as to why are we supporting a regime which is causing hunger, which is brutalizing its own population.
Thank you very much for the good work you all do at the Oakland Institute. The website is oaklandinstitute.org. I very much appreciate, and we will keep on top of this story.
Thank you very much.
That's Anun Radha Mittal. Before we end today, those of you who have a need to have some counseling on shopping and cooking and food selection and nutrients and health issues, we've added a new person to help you free. You don't pay a penny. She is a graduate of Albert Einstein School of Medicine, number one in her class. Her name is Nadia. Saturday, Sunday, Monday, in person, is the only way you'll get a consultation. Call 812-874-4000, 212-874-4000. Also, if you have questions concerning food addictions or any addictive behavior, overweight, or bulimia or anorexia, areas she specializes in helping people. But she is, I wanted someone specifically to show people how to shop for less money, how to get better nutrition, how to prepare foods, how to use different herbs and seasonings. And we hadn't done that before. Now we are, because you asked for that, and it cost you nothing. I pay her a very good salary. She don't have to pay her a penny. All right, so that's that. In the studio now, we have Elizabeth. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello. Excuse me. Sorry about that. Hello, Gary. This is a question from Laura. She's in Cambridge in the UK. She's at the university there, and her student friends and her are listening to your show. She says that yesterday... sorry about that. Excuse me. Yesterday, you mentioned people should not be confused over the difference between the Democrats and the Liberal Democrats, who are all disguising themselves as progressives. Can you please distinguish between the two?
Okay, they're not all doing that. Here's our problem. First, see the problem. The problem is that historically you had kind of your classical Roosevelt Liberal Democrat, those who supported programs that would help the poor, that would have support public education, that supported a living wage, that supported protecting our environment, to keeping it clean and usable, that respected the commons, property that we would all use, a park, a river, a lake, in common. Today, many of those have morphed into a corporate Democrat, or what was called a blue dog Democrat, the Clinton Democrats, the Obama Democrats. These are people who first and foremost get much of their support, financial support, from major corporations. And when people give you tens to hundreds of millions of dollars in these campaigns, they expect access. And without access, they expect you to listen to their needs and honor those needs. And that's exactly what has happened. Occasionally throwing a bone to your constituents. When Clinton said he has four unions, then passed NAFTA, it was anti-union, it was anti-labor, and then trying to get corporations, the very corporations that you have access to get all the corporate heads together and say, look, you're making about $2 trillion in profits this year. Why not pass that down to your workers? Why not increase their labor so that they have a living wage, so they can not only pay their bills or mortgages, their educational programs, but then have some left over for savings? Instead, just the opposite. Let's support the corporatists like the Henry Kravitz and others who call themselves Democrats, who are head of Channel 13, the PBS board here, who are multi-billionaires, but they're called Democrats, or they call themselves liberal. They're not. They're corporatists. On the other end, you had the Eisenhower conservatives, who were Republican, but conservative, but they had different ideals. Today you have the corporate Republican, the corporate conservative, the religious conservative, who is intolerant, who is bigoted, who is racist, who is insensitive to the needs. And both are living in complete contradictions to the original ideals. So what has happened, let's say you were a conservative, but of ethics, a good ethic, or maybe you had strong libertarian values, you were a liberal, and you had strong humanistic values and spiritual values, and you actually had a lot in common with each other. You were excluded. You're pushed out. You no longer have a place. So what these people did, now that we have founded the Progressive Radio Network 7 years ago, we're now the leading voice and form for all those individuals who didn't have any longer that comfortable fit because they were having to make enormous compromises in their own message, their own ideas, because they had no other media to be in. because we only allow two messages in the America, the official left and the official right. On the left is MSNBC or Keith Olbermann, but those are corporatist. They are not progressives. Progressives are people who look for the truth and are willing to make massive compromises just to get along to go along because there's something in it for them. They are far more idealistic, whether they're from the left or right, from conservative or liberal perspectives, but they're honoring the traditional liberal, the Jeffersonian concept, the Lincoln concept. These are the people that we should be listening to, and nowhere in the major media do you see them. By the way, rarely even in The Nation magazine, and that's a hard statement to make, because if you're too progressive, you're pushed out. So what happens is the latest national poll shows that the most respected name in the spectrum is progressive right now, 68%. Way down at 50 is, you know, is liberal, and below that is 40 is conservative. So now they're wrapping their name around this. They're like, oh, yeah, we're progressive. No, these people are not progressive. So look for the people who are willing to take on Obama. When was the last time you saw Keith Olbermann do a commentary, a biting, brilliant commentary that he has done against Bush, against Obama?
Never.
All right? Against Barney Frank. Right. He has him on the show. Against Nancy Pelosi. He has him on the show. Well, I can tell you, if I had him on my show, I'd be holding my account for every one of the programs they voted for, including voting for, both of them voting for this defense authorization bill that makes us closer to a fascist state. All right? The progressives are the one taking it on. You want to know a real good progressive? Chris Hedges. And the person coming up next on this program, Mike Fader. Have a nice day, everyone. Thank you.